listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hello, here's a statistic for you. Around 62 million people last year suffered the effects of extreme weather. We love statistics and we Brits love to be talking about the weather. I'm John Bates and welcome to this podcast. I'm joined today by three experts to delve into all things weather-wise. I'm joined by Phil Bicknell from AHDB. He's looking at the financial impact, looking at the markets and what actually happens under these extreme weather conditions. I'll also be talking to Lincolnshire farmer David Hoyles. David Hoyles is the man on the ground who's going to tell us what's really happening out there in the fields and the impact that it's having on farming. Nicola Dunn, also from AHDB, is a technical expert. She's going to be commenting on some of the practical aspects and the things that farmers can do and the resources that they can access. So you'll all remember the beast from the east, and you'll all remember, I'm sure, that those of us with fair skin were getting sunburnt very easily last summer. So the weather really does impact us as humans, but also as farmers and growers. David Hoyles is Farms Director and is based over in Lincolnshire. David, thanks for joining us on the podcast. Tell us a little bit about your farm and how things are weather-wise.
We're a 700-hectare arable farm based near the Wash, about a mile away from the sea. We grow crops on a seven-year rotation, mainly root crops and a couple of combinable break crops. This year, we've started off the season being very dry, following a very dry year last year, and it's continued into this year.
What about a grower group? Are you involved with a grower group at all?
Yeah, I'm involved with a few grow groups. I'm chairman of a fairly large potato marketing group. I'm a director of a fairly large pea group, and I'm also involved in the mustard growers group as well. So I'm a fairly cooperative-minded person and involved in three grow groups.
And with last year's weather then, how did that affect your business?
Last year's weather was pretty intense. We had a late spring because the beast from the east, and then things dried out and we thought this was good and we can crack on getting things in the ground. Then that dry weather continued. We started irrigating early, but the ground was at field capacity and the reservoirs were full, and we were able to manage that through the team's hard work, keeping those crops going. We had to prioritise crops in July and August as we were running out of water, and we did have a couple of crops suffer in terms of their performance. But overall, considering the conditions, then we came out okay.
So just specifically, just tell us a little bit about your crops. What is it that you're growing?
We do about 5,000-6,000 tonnes of potatoes, 1,500 tonnes of beetroot, a couple of thousand tonnes of wheat, 100 tonne of mustard, about 5,000-6,000 tonnes of sugar beet. And then we're part of a vining pea group doing the 180-minute peas going into the freezing plant.
Okay, so it's all pretty serious stuff then. So how did you manage your water supply?
Well, last year with the potatoes, we didn't know it was going to be a persistent dry season. So we started off as we thought we should, looking after scab control. Then we realised that the soil was obviously continuing to be dry. So then we were irrigating at every sort of 10 days. Our silt soils are fairly water retentive anyway. So in the past, we've got away with no irrigation. We've only actually been irrigating on the farm for 3 years. But we started irrigating, so every 10 days. Then the beetroot was suffering a bit, so then we added that to the portfolio. Then we gave a couple of the other crops a little drink as well. And then it was mainly concentrating on the beetroot and potatoes. Those intervals then came down to weekly or as quick as we could get around the area. And then by the beginning of August, we realised we were going to be running out of water, so then we had to concentrate on certain varieties and certain crops to prioritise. It was about that time that sugar beet and wheat crops were suffering because they hadn't had any of the preferential water. And so those yields took a bit of a knock, but the potatoes and beetroot yields were fairly good. Give you an indication of how the sugar beet was affected, then we've delivered all our sugar beet now for the 2018 harvest, and our yield was about 20-25% down on the previous year.
Okay, so from a business perspective, that's pretty serious. What organisations could you turn to or did you turn to sort of try and help you manage the weather?
We didn't really turn to any organisation to help us manage the weather, but we did turn to organisations to help us mitigate the weather conditions. So we were speaking to AHDB, we were talking to Cough, Cambridge University Farms, about what varieties we should prioritise in terms of giving water, which ones can deal with stress better. We were looking at water application profiles, seeing if we could do things slightly differently, if we could change nozzles on our booms to put the water on more finely over a longer period to let it soak in better rather than drown it with 20 or 25 mil over a 20-minute period, just trying to be more efficient with our water. So it wasn't really how we could manage the weather better. It was more about what we were doing, how we could do that more efficiently and make better use of what we've got.
In this year then, this growing season, obviously we've got off to a pretty dry start. Do you think you're well placed to get through this growing season?
This year, at the moment, it's looking like it's going to be a bigger challenge than last year. Last year, we started with a full water table, like I said, and the reservoir's full. This year, we've got about 30% in our reservoir. We're at a massive moisture deficit in the soils, and we're only in April. I know we are only in April, and that's the godsend. So things can change fairly quickly. There's the old saying, oak before ash, you'll get a splash. Ash before oak, you'll get a soak. Well, the oak came out for the ash, so it looks like we're only going to get a splash if that old saying's right. And with the low water table, soil moisture deficit there, and our reservoir's not full, then it could be interesting.
So, David, what about your priorities going forward on the crops side and any innovations? Is there anything that you're considering?
In terms of which crops we'll prioritise with any available water, then it's on a profitability basis. So for us, it's about root crops mainly, which is the potatoes and the beetroot. So they'll be getting the lion's share of that water. If the situation changes and more water comes available, then we'll put some on some of the other crops. We need everything to perform, and some obviously take priority over the others, and depending on that profitability. In terms of what tools we're looking at and what we changed from last year, we've invested in more soil moisture probes. So we're putting more of those in the ground, and also you're obviously using the spade, getting out there, checking the field. And that then gives us daily live feeds to show us what the moisture deficit is at different levels in the soil. So hopefully we can be more efficient. And if we need to push the boundaries about those deficits a bit more because of the lack of water, then that's what we'll do. We're also doing other things like tissue sampling on the crops. And one big thing that we took on board from last year was nutrition. So we're looking at different ways of getting nutrition into the crops rather than lying on solid to be washed down with a bit of rain or a bit of irrigation. Then we're looking at more liquid and micronutrients. I also think there's been quite a bit of press on biostimulants and particularly amino acids. So I think this year is going to be quite a good year if we do continue to get the stressed crops to have a play with those and do some 5 or 10 hectare trials, probably using the new ADAS guidelines for farmer trials and see whether anything works on our farm in our rotation.
David, we wish you well and thanks very much for contributing to this podcast. So as David said, the place to go for all your weather-related tools is the AHDB website. That's ahdb.org.uk/weather. There's guidance there, there's news, and there's lots of information that hopefully will help you whatever the weather. So let me turn to Phil Bicknell. And to Phil, if I can just say, the weather affects us all, but it also affects the markets. What happened in 2018?
John, first up, I think I should mention that it's a no-win talking about the weather, isn't it? I can almost guarantee that if I start talking about how the dry period has impacted crop yields on light land, I'll have somebody tell me that he farms heavy clay and they've had a really strong year, their best year in a number of years. So it feels like a no-win. And in the past, I've done kind of TV interviews or radio interviews that talk about the wet weather, and they've normally been done against a backdrop of a blue sky and blistering sunshine. Similarly, if I talk about drought, I can guarantee it rains. But try and take a step back from all of that and looking at 2018 in the round. We, of course, as you said, we had the beast from the east, that slow, cold start to the year. We then had some really dry conditions through the summer months that impacted growing for a range of crops. I suppose now we've got the benefit of hindsight, and critically, we've got the official data. So if I start to look at a sector like potatoes, the weather did hit that. We had our lowest overall potato production since 2012, and it was less than 5 million tonnes. Not a huge amount less, but dipped to 4.9 million tonnes. And that's only the fourth time that it's dropped below that 5 million tonne threshold since 1960. So it was pretty unusual times. If we take something like cereals, well, probably weather had less of an impact if we look at the overall figure. So production again dipped, but not to the extent that we've saw in potatoes. And just shy of 14 million tonnes, it was certainly better than some were anticipating earlier in the growing season. So that's the crops angle. I suppose in terms of the livestock side of things, again, the benefit of hindsight, if we look at something like the milk production figures, actually we finished the milk year, which runs from April to March, we finished that pretty strongly for 18-19. And actually, if we look at the most recent set of data, milk deliveries for the final week of March were 4.1% up on where they were in 2018. So there's been some kind of positives. The bit on the dairy, though, for example, why that's been achieved is because people were short of fodder, were buying in feed. Better quality feed means stronger milk yields. So production has been up there, but the bottom line is, what's the cost of that being?
Okay, and whilst world leaders then, they're concerning themselves with climate change, obviously farmers have got to worry about what's going on out there a little bit more locally. So there's a bit of give and take then. Last year it didn't fare too bad, but this year's got off to a bit of a dry start, hasn't it? What happens if we have an exceptionally warm summer again this year from the market's perspective?
Yeah, I think we'll all be checking the weather forecast. I mean, one of the things that I increasingly turn to is AHDB's weather hub, and I'm looking at the latest data on comparative years. So if I'm looking at the Midlands region, the final quarter of last year was drier than average. The first couple of months of this year, well, rainfall's been around about half of what we'd normally expect for the long-term average. That all impacts on the production potential. So I'm kind of looking at that and looking back and saying, well, we have to go back as far as 2006 to find the first couple of months when we've had less rainfall. So I'm trying to think back and also think, actually, how did things pan out that year? Did we get back on track? Are we really in unprecedented territory? And I think a lot of people will be doing the same.
So if we are in that unprecedented territory, does that mean from a financial point of view, things are going to get tough for farmers?
Yeah, I think that all filters into the cost base. So coming at it from a livestock perspective, if you're looking at a shortage of feed and forage continuing because we had that long winter, which meant people used up reserves in the winter of 17-18. We had, in some parts of the country, fodder yields were really impacted by the dry weather. So not only was the amount of silage and hay they were able to crop through the summer limited, they started feeding it earlier because they didn't have the grass in the fields. So we're working on an inflated cost base already. The risk is that if we don't get the fodder growth, that cost base just increases.
So that's going to make a mess of the bottom line. And I guess your advice is that farmers need to be very conscious of their cost of production.
And farmers will be looking at this pretty regularly, I can assure you that, John. I think that we know from when we were in the midst of the drought last year, one of the key things that people were asking us for at AHDB was just a ready rec in terms of forage, trying to work out how much they got and how much did they need based on the numbers of livestock that they've got. I'd imagine farmers will be crunching those numbers again. They will be working with their feed nutritionists and their advisors and trying to work through their options. The one, I guess, kind of advantage, if I could be so glib, is that now we have the opportunity to start thinking through the what-ifs earlier. So if I think about the family farm at home, we're probably pretty short on grass right now. So I'm starting to already think through some of the alternatives and trying to think through actually what's the dry matter requirement of the animals that I've got and will I be able to meet it? If not, what are my options?
Are there tools available from AHDB that can help you and help our levy-paying community?
You know, one of the things that I've been looking at quite closely has been the Forage for Knowledge tool, which flags up grass growth. And that looks at a number of farms across the country. And I use it as a bit of a proxy for what's the growth rates that we've got from a grass perspective. You know, when I look at that, normally this time of year, you'd expect grass growth to be on a rapidly rising profile. Actually, the last 2 weeks, it's flatlined. I'm seeing it in the statistics. I'm seeing it in the fields as well.
Okay, Phil, I think we'll probably have to leave it there. But thank you very much. Nicola Dunn. Dunn joins us. Nicola works for AHDB and is the water resources expert. Hi, Nicola. So just tell me a little bit from your perspective, a little bit about the current weather and the impact that that's having out there on the land.
Well, what we've seen over the winter period is that the rainfall has actually been below average and below normal. And that winter period is key really for refilling our reservoirs and bringing groundwater levels back up to normal. So that lower than average winter rainfall has actually been the third consecutive dry winter in a row. And that means that we're in quite a less resilient position than what we might be going forwards into spring as a result. So if we do get further hot, dry weather later on in the spring and summer, that means there could be concerns for how that water resource is going to last the season. At the minute, the areas of most concern are actually in the chalk aquifers. So that area extends across East Anglia, the Thames region, and down to Wessex, where groundwater is not responding and levels have not been topped up as a result of the drought last year.
So we're talking about last year specifically because obviously we suffered some pretty extreme weather, not only in this country, but also around the world. Just tell me a little bit about historical data, though. Let's look back a little bit further than just last year, if we can.
I think last year really, I suppose, brought to the fore the fact that we're going to have to look at how we use water wisely. So there is interest in looking at different irrigation techniques, whether that's using drip irrigation to conserve some of the water and make the water that we do have go further. We've got interest in trading water sort of between license holders. So if your neighbour's crop plans have changed and they're not going to use their water, then there is that ability to again speak to the Environment Agency and see about sharing that water resource. So speak to the Environment Agency if you're in that position. We've also seen a sort of growing interest in precision irrigation and using scheduling technology to be able to apply the water where it's needed based on the forecast for what rainfall is expected. But further than that, I suppose we've seen a lot of interest in how you're going to store water. We are used to getting water during that winter period, so it makes sense if we can to build some sort of storage into the system to save that water and make use of that during the spring and summer time. And I suppose further than that, it's about diversifying the water supplies. So if you use mains, can you also install a borehole? If you're used to abstracting from rivers, is there an ability to put in a borehole or maybe to use mains water to have that backup supply in place? We're interested in looking at some of these techniques and ideas through our strategic farm network. And this year we're looking at trialling some different irrigation techniques on our strategic potato farms. But I think it's going to be something we're going to look further at in future years as well. Just it's about making the most of that water that we do have and making it go further if possible.
Okay, Nicola, you make some references there to 2012, and I'm sure for the people that were spectators at the Olympic Games, they were very grateful for some of the good weather. That's not something that they can often rely on in this country, but of course, if you were a farmer, then it was a slightly different picture. Let's talk about what farmers are doing now, because we started off with a fairly dry period to the year. What are you seeing farmers doing out there that's preparing them for potentially another dry growing season?
We've actually put all our information together on the AHDB website in one centralised location. It's ahdb.org.uk/weather, and that's bringing together cross-sector information, including the information for seasonal water management for potatoes, some fact sheets for horticulture, and some new guidance that we put together after last year for livestock sectors, looking at what you do in the event of a disruption. So that's all been pulled together into one central location, and you'll also find links there out into our weather hub, where you can look at some of the historical data and up-to-date live information. And you can start to do comparisons with what the situation looks like this year compared to those previous years, and really sort of understand, I suppose, comparing it to previous years, where we might be going in the next couple of months.
Great, Nicola. That's really useful. Thank you very much indeed. So the AHDB website is the place to go. Great to talk to you, as always, Nicola. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information. And follow us on Twitter @theAHDB to stay up to date.